This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Although this year's election seems like the most chaotic and unpredictable one in recent memory, there have been times in the past when election campaigns elicited shock and upended tradition. Think back to 1968, when Robert F. Kennedy, known affectionately to most Americans as Bobby Kennedy, was assassinated while campaigning for a presidential nomination during his speech at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. Kennedy was beloved, particularly by liberals, for his strongly pro-civil rights and anti-war views. But some conservatives also count him as a hero because of his lesser-known political origins when he started out working for the rabidly anti-communist Senator Joe McCarthy. A new biography of Bobby Kennedy attempts to present a nuanced view of the liberal icon. My guest is Larry Tai. He is an award-winning journalist at the Boston Globe and a Nieman Fellow at Harvard University. His earlier books include the New York Times bestseller Satchel, as well as The Father of Spin, Homelands, and Rising from the Rails. He now joins me to discuss his new book called Simply Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon. Welcome to the program, Larry.
Nice to be with you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, how do you feel, how relevant do you feel the story of Bobby Kennedy is today? Before we get into the history, particularly his origins, which are so fascinating, I want to kind of bring up the relevance of somebody like Bobby Kennedy. And I'm thinking of Bernie Sanders, you know, somebody who became beloved just this past year, very different person to Bobby Kennedy. But is Bobby Kennedy's story very relevant even today?
I think Bobby Kennedy's story could not be more resonant. I had not planned it around the 2016 election, but everything about this year's campaign, I think, dredges up memories of 1968, starting with the fact that the country is as riven today as it was in 1968 by racial tensions, by overseas involvements that we're not sure we ought to be a part of, and generally a sense of division. Bobby Kennedy was offering an answer, however, I think in 1968, that's very different than the kinds of answers the candidates have offered today. He's a bit of Bernie Sanders, he's a bit of the realist Hillary Clinton, and he somehow magically managed to appeal without the divisive tone to even angry white Donald Trump supporters.
And a lot of that has to do with how he talked about issues, how he cast them. He became one of the, you know, earlier sort of politicians for whom personality was really a selling point. But I want to go back. Let's go back to his origins. I did not know, I had no idea that this person who is such a liberal icon started his political career out working for, of all people, Joe McCarthy, one of the most reviled conservative candidates in U.S. history.
Yes, Sonali, that's exactly as Bobby Kennedy would have had it. That on the one hand, when he started out in the 1950s, and one of his first important jobs after law school was working for Joe McCarthy, he was incredibly loyal to McCarthy. He believed that McCarthy was one of the few people in Washington with the courage to stand up, not just to the Soviet Union, but to what he saw as communists who had infiltrated the State Department and other agencies in the U.S. government. And Bobby Kennedy went to work for McCarthy, knowing that McCarthy was his dad's friend, but also knowing that he believed in all of McCarthy's anti-communist rhetoric, the same way much of America did back then. In fairness to Bobby Kennedy, he did the best work McCarthy had ever done. The one set of hearings that Democrats and Republicans and the press all agreed McCarthy did well with the hearings that Bobby Kennedy ran for McCarthy. But as McCarthy became more and more controversial, Bobby was torn. He was a loyal guy and wanted to stay loyal to McCarthy, who was his friend and had been his boss. On the other hand, he knew it didn't do his brother Jack Kennedy any good for a liberal Democrat to be seen as having befriended the most rabid of the anti-communist Republicans.
He also, I understand, had a relationship with McCarthy's very close aide, Roy Cohn. What was the relationship between Bobby Kennedy and Roy Cohn? And what did that say about Kennedy's political evolution or how he started sort of making his way out of that experience with McCarthy?
So Roy Cohn stands as an example of one of the people that Bobby Kennedy learned to hate with an extraordinary passion. There were four people in his life that he really despised, and the first of them was Roy Cohn, who was McCarthy's brilliant and arrogant young aide. McCarthy had lots of excesses, as we know, in terms of violating civil liberties, and in his search for communists, undertaking witch hunts. And Bobby Kennedy, rather than blaming Joe McCarthy for any of that, found it more convenient to blame Roy Cohn, who he didn't like and who he saw as a competitor. And when we started out talking 5 minutes ago about the links to today's campaign, Roy Cohn has a pretty profound link to today. He, it turns out, in his old age, was a tutor to the young Donald Trump.
No. Wow.
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty remarkable. All right, so let's talk about the fact that Bobby Kennedy, you know, made his way, was sort of worked his way through a fairly sort of standard political trajectory of a rising star in politics between him working for McCarthy and him running for president was, of course, his stint as attorney general and then as senator. What marked his work as attorney general most? Was it his decision and desire to go after organized crime? And what did that say about his political values?
So let's start at the beginning. Jack Kennedy is elected president, and he decides, at the urging of his father, Joseph P. Kennedy, to name his kid brother Bobby as attorney general. And in the history of the United States, there were only two attorneys general who were younger. And in the history of the United States, there may never have been an attorney general who had less obvious experience that qualified him for the job. He had never tried a case in a court of law, and he was a green young lawyer.
And would you call it nepotism?
Yes. So that was the downside. He got a lot of criticism, Jack Kennedy, but he was the new president, and Congress was going to give him the attorney general that he wanted. So Bobby starts out with exceedingly low expectations. He then goes after organized crime in a way no attorney general ever had. He learned on civil rights. He started out pretty green on civil rights, and by the end, he may have been the most trusted white man in black America. He also understood that the attorney general was about more than prosecuting cases, that he was about standing for justice. And he tried to reform the bail system. He understood that impoverished clients deserved criminal defense attorneys. He stood for all the best things that an attorney general could stand for, such that he starts out as the greenest and least qualified attorney general ever, and he ends up, if not the best attorney general ever, then certainly the best in his era, to the point where he became a role model for Eric Holder, the quite liberal attorney general for Barack Obama for most of his term, and for John Ashcroft, George Bush's very conservative attorney general. Everybody found something in Bobby Kennedy's time as attorney general that they could relate to and use as a role model.
So would you say then that his time as attorney general was really the time where he forged many of his values and his political views?
I would say that. I would say that he matured as attorney general. He started out as Jack Kennedy's kid brother, and he ended up as the closest thing America has ever seen to a co-president. Jack Kennedy turned to him for advice, not just on legal issues. He turned to him for more advice than he did his Secretary of State on critical foreign policy issues, from the Bay of Pigs to the Cuban Missile Crisis. He was Jack Kennedy's advisor on defense issues. He was his civil rights icon. He was the moral beacon that I think Jack Kennedy, when he wanted to know not just what was politically expedient, but what was right, he would go to his brother Bobby. And he was precisely what Joe Kennedy had envisioned that he would be. Jack knew that Bobby had his back. Jack knew that while other people were looking out for their own interests as well as Jack Kennedy's, Bobby Kennedy had his brother's best interests at the front and center for the entire 3 years that he was his attorney general.
Let's talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis. What role did Bobby Kennedy play? I mean, we might like to think, given his later views on war, that he might have, had a much tempered view about this issue, that he might have erred on the side of liberal caution, but did he?
So as you say, we might want to think that. We might also want to think that because that's what Bobby told us in his first insider's view of the Cuban Missile Crisis, a famous book that he authored called 13 Days, which was turned into a very popular movie. And Bobby Kennedy in that book portrayed himself as the dove that he would have liked to have been from the beginning, calling for a blockade rather than an airstrike, calling for tempering and trying to reason with the Russians and the Cubans rather than trying to invade the island. And that's the story that would have gone down as the factual story in history had Jack and Bobby Kennedy not had cameras, had tape recorders in the cabinet room, and the famous Cuban Missile Crisis tapes, which became public long after Bobby died, showed us the true story. And the true story was that Bobby Kennedy ended up as a dove, but he started out as a hawk who wanted to invade the island with airstrikes at a minimum and whatever it took to dislodge Castro. The other story that went untold until very recent years is that Bobby Kennedy helped get us into the Cuban Missile Crisis by waging for nearly a year a secret war that was called Operation Mongoose, where after the failure at the Bay of Pigs invasion, America, and especially its attorney general, tried to undermine the Castro regime and tried, it sure looks like from all the evidence, to actually assassinate Fidel Castro. And it was because of that secret war that the Russians and the Cubans realized that they needed nuclear missiles to protect the island. So Bobby Kennedy, in the end, helped get us out of the crisis, but he helped get us into it before that.
And so did those, did his involvement in these very serious foreign policy issues evolve his attitudes towards war? How did he emerge from them?
He emerged from them smarter and wiser and thankfully helping America dodge a nuclear war rather than get into one. But as everything in his political life, his evolution started at a point that was a little more conservative and a little more naive, and it ended up at a point that was realistic, that was liberal, and that I think showed that politicians can actually grow and evolve rather than just flip-flop.
Right, that term flip-flopping these days is, I suppose the right began that with John Kerry's presidential bid. But evolution is usually something that happens from one point to the next and it goes in one direction. And it does seem that Bobby Kennedy went in that direction. I want to go back to the question on organized crime. As Attorney General, what role did Bobby Kennedy play in dealing with organized crime in the U.S.? Today, for those particularly younger Americans, it's hard to imagine the extent to which organized crime played a role in American society. It was a huge, huge thing. And today we don't have those same levels of organized crime. Is Kennedy to thank for that?
So I would like to ask your anybody who's tuning in now to think back to the movie The Godfather, to have sort of a feel for what organized crime represented as a legitimate threat in America. Bobby Kennedy, much to the consternation of the FBI director J. Edgar Hoover, who wanted to keep focusing on communists as a threat to America, Bobby Kennedy understandably saw a more serious threat in organized crime that he felt was infiltrating everything from legitimate businesses to unions. And Bobby Kennedy went after it with a vengeance. He went after Jimmy Hoffa, who he felt had been compromised by organized crime. He went after the big mafia families. And he went after the whole notion of just putting in front of the American people that there really was something called the Mafia or the Cosa Nostra and that it did pose a threat to us. The only place he didn't go after was an organized crime, apparently affiliated figure who was the crooner of the day named Frank Sinatra. And that was a little bit too close to the Kennedy family. Sinatra was an old family friend. So while he encouraged his brother Jack to break ties with Frank Sinatra, he didn't encourage his assistant attorneys general to go after with the evidence they felt they had to maybe indict Frank Sinatra.
I am speaking with Larry Tai. He is a New York Times winning best-selling author, and we're talking about his book, Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon, very relevant to today's election. And we're going to keep Larry on for an extended interview, which you can access in the on-demand premium content section of our website. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. So, Larry, let's talk about how the Kennedy family as a whole saw Bobby Kennedy. You talked about Joseph Kennedy, his father, Jack Kennedy, the president who brought Bobby Kennedy on as Attorney General. And the Kennedy family, of course, is very much, you know, they're an iconic American political family. What plans, as far as you can tell from your research, did the family have for Bobby Kennedy in his role as Attorney General? Did he prove that he too could be a future president?
So there are two answers to that. The first is the early answer. Joe Kennedy saw Bobby, as he described him, the runt of his litter, the one who was the smallest kid, the middle kid, the one least likely to amount to anything. And Jack Kennedy had an equally low opinion of Bobby in the early days. He was his kid brother who he just didn't have much use for. Jack Kennedy at one point insisted that he take Bobby overseas with him, and that was something Jack Kennedy didn't want to do. By the end, Joe Kennedy realized that Bobby was the child, was the son most like Joe, the one who could get things done, the one who he made executor of his estate, the one who would hold the family together. And as we discussed a few minutes ago, Jack Kennedy saw Bobby as his most trusted lieutenant and as the closest thing he had to somebody he could really share all the responsibilities of being president. And it was in the Kennedy family, there was nothing more important than family. The Kennedys saw as their three totems, the Democratic Party, which they were loyal to, the Catholic faith, which they were loyal to, and most important of all, the Kennedys, which they were incredibly loyal to. Joe Kennedy thought that all of his boys should be ready to be president if something happened to the one who was a little bit older than them. And by the end, he thought that Bobby was more ready than anybody.
You mentioned earlier that Bobby Kennedy ended up becoming the most trusted white man in black America. Let's talk about that very important part of his legacy, and that is his role in the civil rights movement and also his relationship with Martin Luther King Jr. How did, and we know that Bobby Kennedy made a very important historic speech in the wake of King's assassination, but even before that, how did his views on race relations and the civil rights movement evolve to where they ended up to basically want to fight for full equality for black Americans?
So I want to tell you three very quick stories of Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King that answer your question. The first is a story in 1960, just before the election, when Jack Kennedy was running in a very close race with Richard Nixon. Martin Luther King is arrested on a relatively trumped-up driving-related charge and put in jail and then in prison in the state of Georgia. And his wife and lots of other people thought he might never come out alive. Bobby Kennedy, without anybody knowing it, made a behind-the-scenes phone call to the sentencing judge that was unethical for a lawyer to make, but may have saved Martin Luther King's life. And Martin Luther King, in return, encouraged black America to vote for Jack Kennedy. And many sophisticated political analysts, including Dwight Eisenhower, the then incumbent president, thought that that phone call may have helped swing the election in 1960. Fast forward to Bobby Kennedy as Attorney General, where when there were big riots in Montgomery, Alabama, in Birmingham, Alabama, at the University of Mississippi, at what was known as the Ole Miss campus, Bobby Kennedy was very slow when there were race riots to insert federal troops. He didn't want to make his brother look bad, and so he moved too slowly to protect blacks who were protesting for their right to enroll and their right to enjoy the freedoms the Supreme Court and the Constitution had given them. So that's Bobby Kennedy not quite getting yet all the things that Martin Luther King hoped he would get. But even at that middle stage, Martin Luther King told his young aides, give this guy Bobby Kennedy a chance. Deep down somewhere, I think he's got the right stuff. Fast forward now to 1968. Martin Luther King has just been killed. Bobby Kennedy is campaigning in the state of Indiana, and he's about to go into a big rally in the middle of the black ghetto in Indianapolis. The mayor tells him, stay away, and Bobby says, I'm going. He goes into the middle of the black community. He jumps up on the back of a flatbed truck, and for the next 5 minutes, he gives what may have been the most effective and impassioned speech ever by a white politician in a tense racial situation. He, for the first time, tells most of the listeners that their hero, Martin King, has been killed. He, for the first time, talks about the fact of how angry he felt when his brother, Jack, was killed. And in 100 American cities that night, there were race riots. One of the only cities in America with a large black population that stayed peaceful that night was Indianapolis. And that is because Bobby Kennedy, in those 5 minutes, found precisely the pitch-perfect tone to use in discussing racial violence. And that is the tone that Hillary Clinton and the Barack Obama and maybe Donald Trump have been searching for this year and have not quite found.
Let's talk about Ethel Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy's wife. First of all, you mentioned their adherence, the Kennedy family's adherence to Catholic values, and and presumably that is what also informed the fact that Ethel and Bobby had 11 children, which is pretty remarkable. And you, I understand, interviewed Ethel for this book. How important was his relationship with his wife in his political values, in terms of his political values? I mean, with 11 children, I can't imagine that Ethel had much time for much else, particularly as Bobby was busy pursuing a political career.
So the good news for them is they had a lot of help in raising the kids. They had nannies, they had people who were there to take care of everything from cooking to cleaning to
And that's sort of a standard fact of wealth and in white America. We should definitely acknowledge
it. It is absolutely a standard fact of wealth in white America, a standard fact of life in Kennedy America. And yet, Ethel may have been the single most important person in Bobby's life from the moment that they met. She was the one who gave him confidence that his brother may have been president and may have been taller and more handsome, that Bobby was as good as Jack or Ted or anybody in the Kennedy family. She is the one who gave him confidence that he could be the one to be the glue in that family, that they could outdo his parents, who had 9 kids, by having 11 kids. Most importantly, she's the one who gave him the confidence that he could be attorney general, that he could be a senator, and in the end, that he could be president. And he believed in himself, in part because Ethel believed in him. And those 2 interviews that I did with her convinced me that she got Bobby better than any political ally of his, better than any sibling of his, that she was, as much as we overuse the word alter ego, Ethel was Bobby's alter ego and was his full and equal partner.
I understand you also interviewed one of his close friends, John Siegenthaler, for this book. And of course, a lot of the Bobby Kennedy era generation, people who knew him, are very elderly, and most have, in fact, died right now, including Siegenthaler. How were you able to extract information from some of his, first of all, even get the interviews, but then also, make some of his closest friends talk to you about these intimate details that you describe in your book?
Yes, so I interviewed more than 400 people. That was the good news. The bad news is that I was in a race against both age and senility, their age and their senility. And during the 3 years that I was working on the book, probably a quarter to a third of those 400 people died. So it really was a race. What happened was, I'd love to tell you, Sonali, that I am so charismatic that Ethel Kennedy and all of Bobby's friends and relatives couldn't resist talking to me. The truth is that they were getting old, they were sensing their mortality, and I was the guy at that magic moment that showed up in their doorstep. So what they realized is it was me or nobody, and thankfully they took the me option and talked to me, in a way that many of them had either never talked at all or never talked at length. But it was just, it was great. And whether I wrote a good book or a bad book, I'm the last person who will be able to go out and get a first-person story, because Bobby Kennedy would have turned 90 last November, and all of his friends and relatives are really old, if they're alive.
And of course, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated right here in Los Angeles, where I'm broadcasting from, at the Ambassador Hotel in 1968. And he was assassinated while he was campaigning for president, and a campaign that had really ignited hope and excitement among liberals, among people of color in the United States. And it's really interesting to see him campaigning for president himself after decades earlier, or a decade or so earlier, he had helped Nixon he had helped his own brother, I should say, in his bid for president, but also was involved in Nixon's campaign. So Bobby Kennedy knew a thing or two about presidential campaigns, didn't he?
Well, he knew a thing or two about presidential campaigns, and I think after that victory that night where you are in California, I think he was poised to win the Democratic nomination. He also knew a thing or two about Richard Nixon, having helped his brother beat him 8 years before. There was nobody in America who knew more about Richard Nixon's vulnerabilities, and I'm convinced, and we'll never know whether I'm right or wrong, that had Bobby Kennedy lived, he would not just have been the Democratic nominee, but he would have beat Richard Nixon pretty decisively, and we would have had a very different country then. Had Bobby Kennedy won in 1968, I think he might have been able to build the bridges that he was in the course of building between blue-collar whites, African-Americans, Hispanics, and other minorities that might have made America a very different place, and we wouldn't be revisiting these horrible racial divisions today if we had taken them on rather than papering them over 50 years ago.
Well, Larry, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us and for joining us for this conversation. Thanks so much. Good luck with the book.
Thank you. It was great being with you.
Larry Tai is an award-winning journalist at the Boston Globe and a Nieman Fellow at Harvard University. And we've been talking about his latest book called Bobby Kennedy, The Making of a Liberal Icon. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.